I think readers in general are well educated, like they are curious about the world, so they know stuff. So I don't want to approach them as a way like I have something to teach you. My approach is to make you think. You hear all this campaign about giving the power to women, like, are you saying we don't have power before? What are you saying? We do have power. Just we need to realize we have it. So being able to talk out loud, to speak your mind, does not mean that you're on top of everyone. It's just that you have to write to, and if you know how to deliver it efficiently, then it's great.
Welcome to Vietnam Rising Podcast, where we chase dreams and opportunities in Vietnam and also get real with challenges and reality. On this season of Vietnam Rising, I'm your host, Minh Tâm, and you and I, we will sit down with the shakers and movers in Vietnam to hear about their real stories and why Vietnam is still the place to be. Welcome back to another episode of Vietnam Rising Podcast. I'm Minh Tâm, and today our special guest is San. And welcome. Thank you for coming on the episode.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure to be in here. So I'm a journalist in Vietnam, and I have been doing English journalism here for the last over 2 years now. Yeah.
And what is your focus on journalism?
I cover development issues, inequalities mostly, human rights and the environment.
So and what are we going to talk about today, San?
We're going to talk about journalism, maybe also English journalism a little bit, and I mean doing English journalism as a non-native speaker. And how to use that to elevate not so common voices.
And it's very exciting, and I feel very empowered just by sitting here talking to her. So see you in the episode. I think one of the particular interesting thing about you, then the reason why I want to invite you, is that often on your article, which you work right now for,
I'm a stringer for South China Morning Post.
Yes. And a lot of your articles show a lot of different perspective from particular topics about Vietnam, right? In Vietnam right now, we're talking about trading, we're talking about politics, or we're talking about common knowledge of foreigners about Vietnam. It's mostly either a rising economy.
Vietnam rising,
yes. But also, you know, like, developing country, there's a lot of problem here, recycling, a lot of things. But then you try to shed light on angles that people don't actually focus on. Why is that?
So I guess it's that's a opportunity to learn, but also opportunity to discover, and also a challenge to every storyteller, including yourself, right, to find a new angle to a story. And to be honest, a disclaimer, I'm not a senior journalist. I've only been doing this for 2 years. So anything you hear from me, you have to take it for a grain of salt. Why do I want to come up with new angles is to first to appeal to the reader why you should care about this. And also the bigger agenda sounds weird. The bigger goal of this is to show international readers that Vietnam is more than just the reductive term that the Western media has been portraying Vietnam. Communism, authoritarianism, domestic violence. So all the bad things. We are a lot more than that. Sure, a lot of it also problem, but a lot of it also people with diverse voices. And I want to show people that Vietnam is not Vietnam War anymore. Vietnam is not a communist country. Like, as a umbrella term, we are 100 million people, and everybody has their own voice. And it is not okay to make generalization about the entire country, which is lazy and shallow. So I'm trying my best to go the other way. I'm not perfect. I'm trying to still improve my storytelling skills, but I hope it's has shown something else about Vietnam so far.
Yeah. And I understand their perspective because, yes, like talking about something that not a lot of people know about Vietnam or any topic in general is always a very good way for a storyteller to bring out their niche or their difference. But, you know, like Vietnam has this culture or saying called đẹp khoe xấu che đúng không? Yeah. So it's kind of like yeah. So it's like this term means that you will show off the beauty things and then you will hide all the ugly stuff, right? That's a saying. That's a common saying in Vietnam. And I'm sure because you shed light on a lot of topics, that means that you will shed lights on bad things and good things about Vietnam. Then do you figure that, you know, Vietnamese readers in general, they wouldn't want the foreigners or outside of Vietnam knowing about these things?
That is just a way for them to say, to suppress or prevent journalists from doing their job, which is to hold people and things accountable. No, I don't care what Vietnamese people think. I don't care what other readers think about, oh, you should cover the ugly and you show up the good. A journalist is not a PR writer. First of all, we have to show the good, the bad, and the ugly. If you don't know what is wrong and what is good as a community, as a person, as a country, how do you progress? How do you improve? And I'm not sitting here as an expert telling people what to do. A journalist in my opinion, a journalist is supposed to be a witness of historical, economical, and social development, wherever they are, and they should make use of especially the language that they speak, because the language comes with the culture and the history of that you speak, and as long as you know how to use it well, you shouldn't care about who you're pissing off, because pissing off people is actually a good thing as a journalist. As long as you if you are receiving compliments as much as you are receiving criticism in equal measures, that's actually a good thing. Because you don't want to please everyone. You're not a people pleaser. You don't want to piss off everyone. So then you should piss off someone and please somebody else. That's with my stories, like my aim is to make people think. I think readers in general are well educated, like they are curious about the world, so they know stuff. So I don't want to approach them as a way like I have something to teach you. That's not my approach. My approach is to make you think.
How did you start from doing journalism? And you know, because you actually doing something, writing on a very, you know, I would say kind of a niche angle of journalism in Vietnam.
No, I'm not.
I mean, not a lot of people. I don't think.
Oh yeah, you're talking about English journalism.
Yes, yes. English journalism. Yeah. And also, you know, talking about like socials.
Topics. I would say that a lot of Vietnamese journalists in Vietnamese medium have been doing this way before I have done this, and have been doing this a lot better than me. So they are a great inspiration. But yes, English journalism is a niche in Vietnam. There are 100 million people in this country, but not many of them would speak English or even use it on a daily basis. Not many, but they are a lot, just not many in general. So there are ways that have lead you to journalism, and there are ways that lead you to journalism you're doing now. For me, I went into journalism because of my education in South Korea. I was there for 3 years, and I was working as a reporter and editor for the university magazine for that long, as long as I was there. That's how I started. I was like, oh, journalism, that existed? I don't know. I didn't know about that. So then I got training and a lot of guidance from the editor at my magazine, and it went from there. But the journalism that I'm doing right now in Vietnam is a combination of many stories and many, many, many developments. But I would say that it was a good choice that I went back to Vietnam and doing what I'm doing now. It's more like I almost went abroad to
Sweden
to pursue my master's degree, but I did not for a number of reasons I would not bore you with. But so then it became an opportunity for me to look inward, in a sense of that I started to look inside my country. What is going on here? Like, so many things that's happening. Do I want to understand them? Yes. How do I understand them? And then journalism was a great way to do that. So instead of looking outward, oh, the world is so big, I want to go out. Now I'm just like, I've been invested in this country and understand it more. And it's been great. And essentially, I'm being paid to be curious, which is, if you think about that way, it's not that bad because I get to be curious and I get paid for it if I work on it. So it's a great job. I love my job, and I know it's a privilege because I found my passion very much early on. Some people have spent all their life and they don't even know what they like to do. So yeah, I'm loving it. I'm appreciating it a lot.
Any other challenge as a female journalist? Because you're actually the one that go to the field, on the field, and then just report things on the ground as well. Then I feel like that's even more challenging compared to just, you know, picking information on social medias and write a story about it.
Yeah, going on the ground is an immense challenge, especially if you're a woman. I think.
Do you ever get that kind of same?
Sorry.
Same flirtatious stuff from people who you interview.
I wouldn't say that it never happened. It's just, yeah, it happened. Mm-hmm. It happened enough that I would be like, I wouldn't be surprised by it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean I don't feel grossed out by it, but I'm no longer surprised. So going on the ground as a woman anywhere, especially in a country where it's not
safe,
very much famously safe for women, there are stories that I would have to think twice before doing it. For example, it would be very hard for me to go into a brothel because I'm a woman. There's no products in quotation marks for me there. It's women catering to men. So that's not a story for me. If you want to go in, I should go in as an undercover hooker, something like that. Another story is, which was broken by a senior journalist who I've had the luck to listen to as a lecturer. He told me how he broke a story of young boys providing sex service to men under a bridge in Hanoi. Now, as a woman, you wouldn't be able to go there in the first place unless you dress like a man. Mm-hmm. Second of all, going there at 2 a.m. into a criminal den, you have to be prepared for the idea or even just the imagination of being sexually harassed or assaulted. Mm-hmm. That is the first thing that I think, I mean, at least for me, I think of that how devastated I would be for my sexual integrity to be taken away, to mm-hmm. be tarnished. And I don't want it to be, I don't want that to be the case just because I'm doing my job. I should feel safe to do my job. Mm-hmm. And men in general feel much safer to do their job. And it's more of a systematic problem than a individual.
I think it's good that you set up a boundary for yourself. That's like how far you would go for a story.
Yeah, or I would just solve that problem that I would bring a trusted male colleague, which mm-hmm. is what I did for a story I wrote about migrant workers. I brought him, and he was a photojournalist, and I was the one writing the story, and it works well. But it's sad that I have to think about going with someone instead of going just by myself, mm-hmm. you know, just because I'm a woman. So yeah, I think about it a lot. It is not a downer. It doesn't mean that, oh my God, I should quit this job. I should never do this again. It is more of like, how do you solve this? How should you come up with strategy to go around the barrier? Mm-hmm. So yeah.
But I'm sure that because you're a female, sometimes there's also an advantage in that, right? Because, of course, that there's always like, if you're a male, you have advantage on the male side. And then you're a female, you also have your own advantage that you can leverage. And I hope that's the case because your face is the same. Is there any advantage from doing it?
I just never thought being a female is an advantage.
What about like your different like angle on mental health? Because I'm pretty sure not a lot of male think about mental health issues.
That has more to do with education, not them being a man. I think that the lack of awareness comes from an education, not because of the gender.
That's
but
true.
You are right.
But then, like, for example, like you know about toxic masculinity, right?
Right.
Then for people who have toxic masculinity, even though they know about mental health, it's also hard for them to admit that they have those kind of issues. Right. And because it's hard for them to have those kind of yeah, like admit, then yeah, it's hard for them to just like try to explore on that side.
Hmm. Yeah. I guess women in general have better people skills, mm-hmm. just in general. So it is definitely easier for me, in the sense of that I have no problem listening to people, and I don't mind shutting up for like an hour just to listen to them, and unlike many men who find it difficult to do so. One advantage though, which is kind of funny, is that being female and young journalist, oftentimes people would assume that you know nothing about the world, right? Oh, you young thing, you've been doing this for nothing compared to me. So you should sit back and listen, which
great actually for a journalist.
Benefits to me, because you are feeding me all of this information. I will play the young dumb thing, like, oh, yes, tell me more. Oh, I don't know anything. So then like they tell me shit that I would not know. And I would just be like, oh, okay. But obviously, like, you know the line. Like, you're not going to get them push you over. Of course, if they do something overboard, you have to push back. But yeah, usually in Vietnam, at least, like, you play the naive card. Like, oh, I don't know that. Yes, tell me more. So then people will tell you stuff because everybody like to talk about themselves.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of topics that you usually cover?
So development issues, inequalities, human rights and the environment. So my stories are usually coming from a human angle, which I find a lot more...
What does it mean, human angle?
So not a story on data. So you would not just see, I usually don't do stories that say
based on statistics. Like, and stuff.
My story is based on statistics, but it doesn't expand from a statistic angle. So I would usually use the human voices and experience as the backbone of the story. And that leads to many, many different issues. Yeah.
That's a good teaser. Tell me more. What issues? Tell me.
Yeah, that's right.
Do you feel like you have experienced any kind of like censorship because the topics that you cover? Well, before you work at a local.
Mm-hmm.
What
I did.
VN
Express.
But what do you call that?
Like newspaper. Yeah.
Okay, digital newspaper.
Mm. Mm-hmm. I mean, everything is digital now, so
yeah. So like the local one, which is one of the biggest one right now. Yeah. Like, a lot of people got the source information there, and then now you switch to a foreign,
a more international
newspaper. What's the difference?
The scope of readership is a lot larger. I am no longer writing for people in Vietnam. I'm writing for a regional audience and also a global audience, because the languages of English just expands the outreach of the stories. The challenge is that now I can't just think locally. I have to think regionally.
Mm.
I have to think of ways to tell my story, my article, so that people who have no idea what Vietnam is as a country, as a person, as a people, and feel like they should read this story.
Mm.
So that varies case by case. I don't have a uniform answer, but that is what my
scope of work
is, and what my editors taught me, to always care about the readers, to always put yourself in the place of the reader and be like, would you read this as a reader? So that's always the central questions. So because of the different publication, therefore it would be different topics and different ways to approach it. Censorship. That is a very sensitive question, as always.
Of course.
And your question is, have I ever faced censorship?
Mm-hmm.
My answer is
Okay, we don't have any verbal confirmations here, but if you watch the video version, then you will know her answer.
I would just smile and be pretty and answer that question in that way.
Well, that's the thing. Like, earlier you said that you don't try to please anyone. I don't know. I feel like, don't you need to please one that particular party that might can shut you down?
No.
Well, I mean, Vietnam is kind of known for their censorship, right?
Yeah, I don't...
Do you keep that in mind when you're writing, like, all the stories?
I think I have to keep in mind all the challenges of being a journalist, not just that particular issue. Mm. I think the real question here is, do journalists have critical thinking? And do journalists challenge themselves so that they get to the bottom of facts and different narratives to inform the readers? Not who do you please and who are you afraid of? We have a lot of fears, but at the end of the day, it is the story that speaks for itself, and also the behind the scenes of those stories, if audience is curious enough to find out. So I don't have a broad answer to which, ooh, censorship exists in Vietnam. Everybody knows it's a problem. Censorship is a global problem. It's not just Vietnam. The US, do you think there's no censorship problem there? There is a problem there. Everybody has that problem. But I think it is misleading to ask that particular, to shine a light on that particular keyword instead of just asking journalists, what do they, how do they go around it? And do they actually have a critical thinking to tell the stories?
Mm.
And be truthful to what they write.
Yeah, so that leads to the next question is like, how do you stay open-minded or unbiased when you cover a story? Because I assume that if you come in a story with an assumptions, you have to have assumption or theory to dig into a story, right? Was there any time that your assumptions were that wrong and you found a completely different angle from it?
Hmm. No, I've never been dead wrong about anything. What I would say is that I've often find myself to be ignorant of the nuances. It's so easy to make generalization. Oh, poor people have nothing. Oh, they must have this and that, ABC challenges. But it is the nuances that make the story a lot more interesting and show a diversity of perspectives, I guess. An example is, you don't read a lot of this in Vietnamese media because it's not the focal attention and interest. But there is a large Việt Kiều community in Cambodia because of the historical relationship between Vietnam and Cambodia and Indochina. Back then, when France colonized us, a lot of Vietnamese have migrated to Cambodia, and also during Khmer Rouge there was a large migration back and forth between the two countries. So there's international media has talked a lot about how Vietnamese Cambodians suffer, ethnic Vietnamese in Cambodia suffer from their papers got get taken away, and people that hate Vietnamese people, just like how Vietnamese hate China. So there, people also suffer from a lot of persecutions. But we don't know much about it here. And the international media, including New York Times and many publications, have shone a light on how difficult life has been there for them. But the nuance is when I got there, and I did write a story about ethnic Vietnamese in Cambodia, it's that within that community of ethnic Vietnamese people, there are people who are better off than the poor ones. The poor ones are the ones who live on boats, who can't afford to pay rent on land, who can't even afford to pay for anything. So they have to live on boats. But they're also people who own businesses and who choose not to leave despite all of those issues. So that is a nuance that I discovered that I didn't know exist before. And then I decided to write a story about it. So then I think the answer for that question would be I try to be open-minded to the nuances and keep pushing myself to look for them and try to communicate them with the readers. Nuance is the word in it, in and of itself, means differences. And to show the reader there are so many differences in the world is really difficult. And you have to capture their attention. So yeah, nuances would be my keyword to go for, usually.
Nice. Do you ever have to battle between raising your own voice, taking care of yourself, and just, you know, go with the flow, whatever the society thinks is the norm?
Yes, I was raised that way. I was raised not to talk back to people, which is very irritating. I didn't like it at all. But somehow I managed to talk back to people from a very young age.
But it's hard, right? It's hard to build critical thinking if you don't ever talk back to people, because sometimes you don't really think about the flaws and whatever they're saying until later on.
I mean, it's more than just talking back, right? It's like, can you formulate a debate? Can you formulate a debunk of what everybody just tell you? Yeah. And can you analyze what they just say? And then you can formulate a response. So for my upbringing, like I've only went to public schools. Like I've never been to any, even in Korea, I went to a national university. So it was not, there was even the slightest sense of international, like Western education. We have been usually given what to think, but not how to think. And I think that is very difficult. And then it came to a realization that if you are not given the right or like the tool or the space to think in your native language, you can do so in another language. Hmm. And I have been doing that in English, because I'm like, I don't need you. There's so many languages in the world. I can do it in any language I want. I speak English. I speak good Korean. I can also do that too. So the world is your oyster. If you don't feel comfortable expressing yourself in Vietnamese, learn another language. And then you go from there.
Okay. So people said that you have different personality if you have
different English, right? Exactly. Yes. I sound like an annoying little woman in Korean. It's like, I sound just like that in Korean. And then when my friends in Korea told me, I'm like, no way, I do not sound like that. I sound a lot stronger. And then when they film me speaking, I'm like, okay, I sound like you. Because I pick up Korean from my female girlfriends there. Uh-huh. So then that's how they speak, and it's just horrible.
I think that's fine, right? It's like you can use that persona with your boyfriend when you're like, hey, you're being cute, right?
To get what you want, yeah.
Exactly. And then maybe when you're one of their article when you need to speak Korean.
Oh.
There's a lot of Korean in Vietnam, you know?
That's true.
So maybe one day you will cover an article about them and you will need your Korean. You're cute.
I don't think that works in professional context, but sure.
Well, it can portray in different ways. But yeah, I think it's so hard, like, particularly, well, you know, because we have always been taught, like, hey, if you're in the dining table or wherever, like the men's talking or the adults talking, then you shouldn't talk back, or you shouldn't just ask, or you should chime in the conversation. And I think it's very challenging. Like even now when I'm hosting this show, I try to think fast and like ask questions, which I'm very good at finding good angle to ask about. But sometimes I just, it's hard for me to find a disagreement on people, because like whatever you're saying to me right now, I would process is like, okay, I understand where you're coming from, and I would not form, or it's hard for me to get an like opinionate or debate with you instantly.
You mean you feel less inclined to disagree with me?
Yeah.
Just because I'm the guest?
No. So like with anyone, right? So for me in any kind of conversations, I don't debate instantly. It's more of like, I would ask you intrigue questions or even trigger you, but it's to hear your thought out. I don't try to debate or get in the fight with you.
But debate is also very fun. If you do it civilly. If you do it politely.
Of course, I know. But I'm not saying it's a bad thing, right? I'm saying that I want to do that more. But for me, because of my own habit, it's hard for me to do that. Because sometimes I just like, okay, cool. Done. That's it. We're agreeing something.
I understand though. It's more like, do you want to be agreeable or do you want to be interesting or like to show a different perspective? Yeah, that's, so that's, it's a, well, it's always something you have to juggle, right?
Yeah,
you have
I know.
To you have to pick your fight. You have to pick your audience. Uh-huh. I'm not gonna pick a fight with some random dude on the street. Like this is not this is not how I'm gonna do it.
Yeah.
But I will pick a fight or a debate with my friends who, you know, we know each other very well and we are able to mend the relationship that is broken because of this debate.
Yeah.
But that's also a trickle thing. Even though for you, you know, you come from a background of going to international school, which have, am I correct me if I'm wrong, but have a lot more rooms to show, to have a more progressive education than people in public schools like
sure.
me.
Yep.
So, but then in general, students in any school in Vietnam have been impoverished in a sense that they don't have a culture to debate. They don't know how to debate.
Oh my God.
It's always, oh, whatever I say that is in disagreement with you means that I'm personally attacking you. No, dude, it's not. I'm just attacking your opinion.
Yeah,
your argument.
Yeah, I know, right?
If you don't know how to separate that, that's your problem.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not going to tell them that. You're not, because nobody wants to be proven wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it is definitely an art to practice that, to be able to show your different perspective and still have respect for each other.
Yeah.
You might not agree with me at the end, but at least you learn something new.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, see, same shit. See, right here.
Like, right here. You have to disagree with me now.
Yeah. But I do agree on that because I do see that people, well, I think it's a loss, such a big loss for education in Vietnam where people don't really actually learn about debate. I actually learned about debate in my high school. Like we actually have like debate session where we just talk and we debate on different, and we are assigned to a Korean particular opinion and we have to work to prove that assigned opinion is right. Even though if personally, I don't agree with that, but I have to work to debate it. And that create a skill for me to detach my emotional out of that opinion and just work on to create a make sense argument. But then like in Vietnam a lot people don't get taught about debate. They don't get taught about critical thinking. Don't get talked about creative and flexibility in terms of like if you encounter a problem, the first thing you do is try to solve a problem and not freaking go to your boss and ask for a solution. And that's such a big thing. Like I
so does your assistant go to you?
No, well he's good though. There's a reason why we're this team. Like we're mini show team with only one technical assistant, but he's been great because he actually one of the few different who able to, you know, manage himself. But unfortunately I've worked with many people who like, you know, fresh graduate or, you know, even when they've been working for a few years already, their critical thinking skills sucks. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Especially, well, I don't know if you know, but another thing about Vietnamese women specifically is that we kind of like downplay each other, like downplay ourselves in terms of like, because we try to be respectful, right? And then we have to kind of downplay out. I know this is kind of nothing, but yeah, but like, this is my opinion, you know? Like, why don't you, like, I hope that we can finally learn to just give our opinion and don't afraid to offend anybody. Because that's so important. You can't be pleasing everybody else.
Yeah.
You know, Yvang, she told this particular story. So Yvang is also one of our podcast guests. You can go back to see her episode on the social impact one. But one story that she told was she has the staff that every single time that female staff came to her, the first thing she always said is, I'm sorry, this is a stupid question, but can I ask you something? You know, like that hers always her opening line.
Oh.
And that just like, it creates such a bad effect on your self-esteem.
I don't think it's good. It's not good to first of all, if you yourself think you don't have self-esteem and nobody else would, I guess. But also, it also a strength and a weakness in the sense of that because if you don't think that you are better than everyone else means that you're being humble, right? Mm-hmm. And if you also counter that to balance it out in a sense of that, hey, but I also have good thing to say, so I will say it, but I will also be humble about it. Mm-hmm. So being able to talk out loud, to speak your mind, does not mean that you're on top of everyone. It's just that you have to write to, mm-hmm. and if you know how to deliver it efficiently, then it's great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, men or women. I mean, men have this opportunity, has this challenge too. Men have the challenge of always expected to speak out, but they don't always have the nicest thing to say. So like, I'll say something, but it's going to be stupid, so I'm going to say it anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
So at the early same time too.
Like in evenings too.
Yeah.
How would you describe your writing style in 3 words?
Jesus, that's not many words. Shit.
Okay, so I don't know. Okay, so shit is her writing style.
3 words. I don't know. Nuances. Sorry, I'm sounding like a broken record.
What feeling or what thought that you want to trigger people to think when they read your article? Maybe that's better for you.
Depending on the issue, like I don't assign an emotion. Mm. Like when you tell people to feel something, they most likely will not feel it. Mm-mm. Again, I want people to think when they read my story, not mm-hmm. how to feel. Like feeling are very subjective. I usually would have, if I can, not every story has a solution, but if I can, I want to offer solutions in the stories. Mm. If we were to discuss a particular problem. Because everyone is just inundated and submerged under so many bad news. And the least you can do, if you can, it's not always possible, is to offer some solutions from trusted voices, experts, researchers, authoritative figures. And hey, I would like to also add here is that if you can, always search for female voices. If you do that today and you will see what I said, you will see that what I say is actually kind of right. If you read Vietnamese articles, a lot of male voices in there, even the commoners on the street or experts or politicians, all males. And you see very, very, very few of them are female voices. And you question yourself, like, where are these females? Where are they hiding? Are journalists actually looking for them? So one of the challenges for me when I interview families is that if I interview a family where the man and the woman are both there, the man is usually the one who speaks, right? Oh, I'm the head of the family. I'm going to speak to you. I will always go for the woman. Please tell me your perspective. But if the minute she stands up, she'd be like, oh, no, talk to my husband. Then obviously I cannot do anything else. But I will always ask the woman. And there are few venues. There are only very few venues in Vietnam where you find not many female voices, including researchers and professionals. And they are not even, it's not even that common for them to speak out. They don't think that they should speak out. They just write and then post on Facebook, but they don't think about talking to journalists to expand that voice out and be like, hey, there are powerful, knowledgeable Vietnamese women talking about these kind of issues, and I want to hear about them. So that is always the effort that I want to go for. Find Vietnamese women voices or Asian voices if my story is about the region.
That's such an interesting insight, right? Because Vietnamese are known, or like Vietnamese women are known, very, you know, a lot of them like involved in the workforce or actually, you know, manage a lot of things within the family household, and even like manage a lot of business. Like I don't remember the statistic, but like around 30% or 40% or 50%, I don't know, of Vietnamese businesses are run by women. But then not a lot of people actually speak out. We actually encounter that problem when we invite females guests. Is that, yeah, sometimes they just like, hey, I don't want to talk about it. I wonder why.
They have a lot of things to talk about. You just have to show them how. Mm. Just like, I have a problem with the word empowerment. In Vietnamese, it means trao quyền. So literally the same meaning as the English word. It means to give the power, to bestow power on someone else. That's bullshit. I don't need anybody to give me power. I have the power. I just don't know how to use it. So show me. Mm. So I don't have.
What is the missing key there? Like,
to assume the woman don't have power. That's the wrong start.
Ah, okay. Oh, you're talking about the empowerment word.
The word itself. And in Vietnamese too. And then you hear all this campaign about giving the power to women. Like, are you saying we don't have power before? What are you saying? We do have power. Just we need to realize we have it and how to use it. That's all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And then realize that actually our words have impact on it, right?
Yeah.
So I understand that you're on a very different journey, I would say. You're being a journalist assistant in English journalist in Vietnam, covering about Vietnam, which is not a lot of people doing it. Also, you also focus on social story or nuances, like different angles that people often don't think about. Then for you, what do you rely on as signs that you are doing the right thing, that you are on your right path?
So that goes into different stages. I know that I'm going the right direction when the people the interviewees express themselves to me. So they open up. That's when I know I'm going the right track. And especially when it is a difficult topic, like, you know, talking to flood victims, about losing their livelihood. There's something psychologically damaging there when you have to look at your rice fields right in front of your house drowned in flood water, and you have to see that every day, and you have to be reminded that I will not make any money to feed myself, to my family, because of that. So when they manage to tell me that with their own words and I can see their emotion, I'm like, okay, that is when I go into the right direction, because that is at the core of their struggle. The second, how do I know I'm on the right track? It's during the writing, when I get the editor's approval and also constructive criticism. You have to add this in. So every story that you see is a coordinated teamwork between journalists and editors. There's a lot of layers of editor and writing to make sure that the audience get the best of what they can from what reporters have found. So when I get both of that from the editors, great. And a third process, the first stage of when I know I'm in the right track, is when I get feedback from the audience. Not just like, oh, this is great, keep going, but more like, oh, this is what I learned from your story. I've came across this myself. And or another feedback is, why didn't you include this? And have you thought about this? So it's more like a reaction from the public discourse that you throw a rock into your leg and you want something, see something, a ripple, right? So that's when I know I'm on the right track. If I produce a story and nobody says anything, I know that's a failure. For sure.
So I think, I think that concludes our episode today. So one last thing. So as someone who are using your voice to sharing out your perspective to the world, then what is your advice or what's the message to those out there who are trying or learning how to use their voice as well?
Know what you're talking about before you open your mouth. I think that's very important. You have to inform yourself first. Don't be entitled. I see a lot of conversation in the US, which is that, oh, you're so privileged and you have many privileges and I don't have any. And that made me think about what privilege I have here in Vietnam. I have a lot of privileges, even though compared to many people, I don't. But from my perspective, I have a lot of privileges in the sense that I speak Vietnamese. A lot of ethnic minorities have to learn Vietnamese, right? And we are a king majority. Like, the king is like 95% of the population. We don't worry about how people understand us. We expect people to understand us. Whereas I'm also from Hanoi, which is this quotation mark, the standard Vietnamese. So I expect everybody to understand me. But when I went to Central Vietnam, I felt so good about and so inspired by is that I have met more than one person who would be like, who speak in Central Vietnamese accent and ask me, could you understand me? Is it okay? Am I making myself sound edible? And I was like, wow, they have such a humbleness that I would never hear any Hanoian say that. So in order to raise your voice, you have to make sure that you also going to listen to other people's voices as well. And take every advice with a little bit of doubt, because everybody who talk to you come from a place of luck and privilege.
Yeah. And for those who want to seek out to see your work, follow you, or just love to chat more about how to use your voice more, their voice more, then where do they reach you or where they can find your work?
My Facebook is private, so so no Facebook for me. But I am on Twitter, so you can reach me there. And I'm on Twitter at Fighting Sen, so like Fighting Nemo, but it's Fighting Sen.
Yeah. Sen is S-E-N.
Yes, mm-hmm. Lotus, the only flower on a Vietnamese currency.
Yeah. Finding Sen, right? Yeah. Okay. Finding in like Finding Nemo, and Sen is S-E-N.
Yeah.
And how about your work? Like, do you have?
Can I have find a portfolio? Your article? Yeah, I can send it to you, and you can mm-hmm. put it in the podcast link.
Yeah, and then yeah, if you search Sen Nguyen on South China Morning Post, right? South China Morning Post, then you can find her article as well.
Disclaimer: this is not a PR podcast. I did not ask for any of this.
It's usually standard, though. So she making me feel like this is not a good part to include her work in here. But no, absolutely just. Check her workout. I think you will find a lot. If you're someone who loves to learn and who loves to get knowledge and seeing different perspective from on the topics, then definitely check out her work. And yeah, let us know and let Sen know what do you guys think about the episode. If you like it, let her know. Shout out to her. Give her love on Twitter or anywhere. And yeah, thank you for tuning in on this episode. And I'll see you in the next episode. Bye-bye.